Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, while we're all perfectly well aware of the climate crisis, there's probably a bit of fatigue related to it. We hear so much about it, we start not to hear it anymore. Plus, there's a wee bit of fatalism about how much we can do. Writing in the Irish Times, the climate researcher Sive O'Neill suggests that we might help if we reframe the issue as a health problem, a bit like we did with smoking and the smoking ban. Sive, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So in practical terms, how might this work?
Well, just back to the reframing issue, we tend to think about climate change in terms of issues like greenhouse gas emissions and renewable energy and kind of big picture technology stuff and the energy system. But climate change is happening because we are burning fossil fuels, and fossil fuels like coal, gas, oil and turf as well release a lot of pollutants besides carbon dioxide, which is the main greenhouse gas responsible for climate change. They also release particulate matter and other pollutants that are very damaging to our lungs and to our cardiovascular system. And more research is coming through about the impact of these tiny particles that are like microns, tiny pieces of emissions that are coming from diesel fumes and combustion of coal and turf and wood. And they're really very, very harmful to human health because they enter into the bloodstream and can make their way all around the body and do terrible damage. So a lot of research is pointing to the impact on, you know, stroke, on dementia, and also on the respiratory system, obviously, you know, lungs and asthma rates and things like that. So basically, a lot of our climate problems are easily understood as health problems when you talk about the fossil fuel industry and fossil fuels per se. And that's a much more direct way of talking to people about the issues and what we have to do than the abstract one of emissions targets. We have some experience of taking on the big tobacco industry. And in fact, it's been quite successful in Ireland. And I think Ireland has played a quite an interesting and leading role in this area.
But say if we could, when it came to cigarettes, it was one specific thing, whereas this is lots of different things.
Well, you see, that's the way we've been told to think about it. So initially, I mean, I think you and I are probably of the same vintage roughly. And you'll remember, as I do very well, what the 70s and 80s were like. I mean, the sky was full of smog from, you know, burning coal and stuff. And then we were all smoking like bejesus, you know, in cinemas, on the upper decks of buses, everywhere, in bars and pubs. And people who didn't smoke were breathing in the smoke as passive, you know, secondhand smoke, which over time, you know, it became clear how dangerous that was for people who weren't directly smoking themselves. So over time, as the research came out, the public health and the doctors and researchers came together and they said, this has to stop. You know, smoking is not just harmful to the people smoking, it's also harmful to people who are bystanders and especially children. So it became understood as a public health problem and also as a health and safety problem. So the reason why the Irish government back in 2004, I think, introduced a ban on smoking in the workplace was for health and safety reasons, so that you as a smoker couldn't damage the health of your co-worker, or that an employer wouldn't be deemed liable for any damages arising from you being exposed to secondhand smoke. So even though it was a kind of a convoluted way to approach it, it was very effective because it meant that smoking suddenly disappeared very, very quickly from bars, from restaurants, from cinemas and all of that. It had been phased out gradually before then. And it became seen as a source of threat, as a source of risk. And that if you were wanting to smoke, you could. Nobody was going to stop you. But the government was telling you quite clearly, with bans on advertising and with very gruesome images on the cigarette packets, how harmful it would be to your health if you did this. And they weren't going to let you expose other people to it. So a very, very different culture emerged. And that happened relatively quickly from the 80s, like within 20 years, to a culture where smoking is frowned upon and very expensive to do it.
Yeah, but that's an instance where individual people, we're making a decision whether to smoke or not. So if we transfer this into the climate change area, there's a series of individual things the government is actively discouraging people from doing?
Well, if you take the smoking regime, the anti-smoking policy, the public health measures, it wasn't just one thing. It relied on, you know, a series of regulatory interventions, bans on advertising, public health messaging, supports to help people quit, and taking on the big tobacco industry, not so much here in Ireland, but definitely in the US, where there was a very significant cases taken against big tobacco to hold them liable and accountable using the health research that they had actually sat on for years themselves. So the idea is to use a mosaic of interventions and to use what behavioral psychologists call nudges, or you're changing the choice architecture. So, for example, if you take smoking, you're making it harder for people to smoke than it is for them not to smoke. They can't buy cigarettes easily. So, again, back in the 80s, you could buy cigarettes anywhere. There used to be guys selling them from vans, but singly, you know, in which was obviously very attractive to children to buy one cigarette. Now you have to go to very specific places, shops, and they're behind cabinets. They're very expensive. I think to smoke a packet a day would cost you over €100 a week, which is a lot of money, you know, especially for people on low incomes. So you're intervening in all different ways to try to deter people and to increase the cost and effort of smoking. And if we did the same thing with fossil fuels, we would be making the alternatives really the default. Like, it would be a default thing to arrive into your rented or purchased accommodation and discover that it's operating with a heat pump, that it's well insulated. It's so that's about, you know, regulations and improving the standard of buildings, whether they're rented or owned, also commercial buildings, and you're making fossil fuels much more expensive than the alternatives. So somebody was telling me today, for example, that the cost of using a public charger in some places is about the same as purchasing petrol or diesel. And, you know, that makes no sense. If you want to change people's behavior, you have to make the option of using a charging point to charge a battery electric vehicle easier, quicker, and cheaper.
And I'm sure right now people have their phones in their hands and saying, is she proposing putting up the price of diesel and petrol? Because there'd be war if that was suggested.
Yeah. But remember, and like, you know, I wasn't in my article today very specific about the kind of policies. But if you take the kind of attitude that was taken back in the 90s and the early 2000s around tobacco, you would face into some difficult political decisions and take them bravely. So I have to give some credit, for example, to Micheál Martin, who was the Minister for Health at the time. And he established an Office of Tobacco Control within the Department of Health. And he gave it a mandate to kind of pursue this, to actually run with the various measures that they introduced, and to introduce that ban on smoking in the workplace, which was the real clinch. And that sort of concentration of political capital made a huge difference in driving the agenda forwards. And they did take some bold decisions. They made some bold decisions to keep increasing the price of cigarettes, even though people liked smoking and didn't want to have to pay more tax. People don't like having to pay more for a good, which is precisely why it operates as an incentive. Now, at the same time, you can decrease the cost of using public transport. You can make active travel cheaper and safer. There's lots of different things you have to do to make that choice architecture work.
Absolutely.
And to make it fair.
Si, yeah. We have to leave it there, I'm afraid. But thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Si Van Eel there, the climate environmental researcher.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.